Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In 2020, while jogging through Glynn County, Georgia, in a neighborhood there, Ahmaud Arbery, a black man, encountered two white men, a father and son. They immediately became suspicious of Arbery, accosted him, and shot and killed him. Both men claimed they thought Arbery was burglarizing the neighborhood. A jury didn't buy that argument and found them guilty of murder in Georgia State Court and sentenced them to life in prison. At the federal level, they were found guilty of hate crimes and other charges. That incident ignited a national outcry against racial injustice and profiling. It also rippled through the running community and created a new phrase, running while black. It also resulted in a move to tackle racial disparities within the running community and launched efforts to make running more accessible, more welcoming to black and minority runners. One place that is happening is here in Charlotte, and this hour we will explore those efforts here and nationally, and while we're at it, hear about the rise of running clubs and get some running tips as well. We're joined by Alexandria Johnson, the lead race director of Start to Finish Event Management and a board member of the Mad Miles Run Club. Shannon Woods is senior manager of diversity, equity, and inclusion at Brooks Running. And Harry Chandler is co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company. Morning, everybody. Welcome to you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Shannon, I'm going to start with you with Brooks Running. Ahmaud Arbery was a victim of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's the problem. There should not be a wrong place or wrong time. If you're out there just jogging away and getting your steps in, getting your exercise in, how much of an issue has this been historically for black runners? Have they had to be careful about where they run?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that you're correct. This shouldn't be an issue. We all should have the right to run in our neighborhoods and adjacent neighborhoods throughout the United States. You know, I think safety is an issue, and we have a long history in the United States of, you know, safety for Black and African Americans. And you know, as it has improved over time, you know, obviously, as we saw Ahmaud Arbery being murdered, it continues to be a threat for Black Americans.
That was going to be my next question, Alex. Has the situation changed in any way since Ahmaud Arbery's death in 2020, or is it still continuing?
I definitely think it's still continuing. I think it has improved, like Shannon said. But I think we as Black runners have been more aware of the situation and have really leaned on creating communities to promote better safety for us, but also to make it more of a prominent thing. You see more Black runners now because we want people to know that we are running and we are going to continue running. So I definitely think it's improving, but there's always improvement that could happen.
Try to put this in. This is probably an unfamiliar situation for a lot of our listeners, Harry. Try to put this into some sort of context. How big of a problem has this been? Does it continue to be?
It's been an issue. It's always been a problem. And I go as far as to say that Ahmaud Arbery was not wrong place, wrong time. He unfortunately had woke up in the wrong skin. It wasn't where he was. It wasn't the road that he was running on. It was the life that was handed to him when he came from his parents. And now it's the unfortunate loss of him has made it something that's been more important, but it's also started to trend and trends fleet. And the reality is it loses and gains momentum, it loses and gains importance. And I think that it's all of our duty to continue the conversation. But it's been an issue and it's been on radar for a long time. It's just now the right thing to do also.
Yeah. And that's
unfortunate as well.
You're a co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company, which sells equipment and shoes and things like that to runners. And obviously, Shannon is with Brooks Running. They manufacture shoes. And so it's in your best interest to make sure as many people are running as possible, because that's how you sell the product that you're in. But Harry, how has there been a large discrepancy in the number of African-American runners versus white runners versus other minorities? Are there fewer Black runners? And if so, why?
I think that's something that's region to region. Here in Charlotte, we have a bit of a gem in that the disparity is not necessarily at the start line of the races and in the retail environments and spaces, but rather in the administrative side of the running industry and the executive side of the running industry. So we have, if you ever have the pleasure of popping into our store, a very inclusive community, a culture that we've dubbed familial, and we created that space organically, and it's because of the community that it's already here. So,
and Shannon, you with the, as I said, Brooks Running, they make shoes, but you're also a senior manager for diversity, equity, and inclusion. When did the company, Brooks Running, when did they start that division and why?
Brooks started working on diversity, equity, and inclusion back in 2016. And we started with a focus of looking at gender balance within our organization and recognizing some disparities within our organization and specifically with women in leadership. And so when we started looking at that data and the experiences of women within our organization and really in the broader outdoor industry as well, we started also looking at race and pulling data and understanding the racial makeup of our organization and looking more broadly in the running industry and the outdoor industry on the racial makeup of employment and consumers as well. And so, you know, it was really important for us to understand that context and understand where we stand now. And also understand the impact that we can have as a running company, right? And so, you know, there's so many issues in the world and so many societal issues that people care passionately about. But the reality is, you know, we can really only have impact in the places that we live and work. And so as an organization, we really looked at how can Brooks have the most impact. And so we look at this in kind of three different buckets, where we look at first is our workplace, our own organization within our organization. That is where we can have significant impact. So that is looking at our hiring practices, policies that we have in place, and then creating a brand and a workplace culture where people want to work with us. And then the second pillar is really looking at representation of runners. And I think that this is so important that we as a brand are able to represent all who run through the images that we show and the stories that we tell about runners.
Harry, I don't know what other products you sell, but is Brooks the outlier here, or are other shoe companies, running equipment companies, also taking a similar look at themselves and at the makeup of their customers?
Absolutely. It's a slow trend. Data is, like, to Shannon's point, and metrics are slowly being collected to see the progress there. There are actual vendors that are coming up now that are Black or minority owned. But there are companies like Brooks and like ASICS and New Balance. And I mean, I get in trouble starting to list that are investing in a DEI platform outside of it just rolling into their HR and or marketing bucket.
So Shannon, Brooks took an internal look at their makeup with regard to diversity, equity, inclusion. But there's also the outside look. And certainly there's altruism involved in this, but there's also commercialism involved in this, because you're in the business to make money. And I read yesterday, and you can correct me if these figures are off, only 34% of runners, 34%, a third, are people of color. That's about 16 million people. So it's in your best interest to get more and more and more people of color interested in running, because that's how you sell shoes. How much of a role did that play in spearheading this effort toward opening the doors to everybody? Because my God, you're leaving out 2/3 of the population.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that plays a big role in it as well, right? And you know, we are a brand and we sell running gear, but we're also a purpose-driven brand, right? And so our purpose is to inspire everybody to run and be active. And we want to invite more people into the sport of running because we really understand the transformative power the run can have on people's lives with health and well-being, both physical and mental. And so we really want to spread that as well to the community. And so, you know, a third pillar is the work that we do within the run community. So that is like on the ground with runners, the events that we sponsor, our partnerships in retail, like with Harry at Charlotte Running Company, our partnerships with broader within the industry, you know, such as the Running Industry Diversity Coalition. We partner with organizations, with our Future Run program that supports youth running. And so those are all pieces that we play as far as inviting more people into the sport of running.
Alexandra, we lost you for a moment, but you're back. Running is not necessarily a team sport. You can do it on your own. And in fact, that's how most runners, or maybe at least many runners, engage in this. It's their moment of zen. They go out there and run just to think things through and be by themselves. But other people need to be surrounded by other runners to motivate them, etc. You're involved in running clubs. I mean, this Mad Miles Run Club is just one of several run clubs in the Charlotte region. Have there been barriers for Black runners in terms of feeling welcomed in some of these running clubs and organizations?
Oh, yes, definitely. We talk about representation and how much that matters to everything you do, but really in the running space, and being a part of Mad Miles has really opened the doors for people to have exposure to what running looks like leisurely, competitively, and really giving the community a place to go to support people that want to learn and grow as runners. One thing that we really focus on is just creating that safe space. We want people to be able to come and run freely and not be worried about their safety. But, you know, when we lack representation in running spaces at other run clubs or at races, it really does kind of, you know, help you lose that motivation to keep going. So one thing we really want to do is just keep introducing the Charlotte community, other run clubs, to the importance of diversity and how we can really show up in different spaces like marathons or ultra marathons, I think is one thing that we are very proud that we have introduced to runners.
Are the barriers, I want to get clarification on this. Are the barriers to Black runners in some of these other run clubs, not yours, they're mostly because when you explore those run clubs or join or try to join those run clubs, you end up being the only African American?
Yes.
And
yes.
So it's not that you're not welcome, it's that you're not comfortable. Is that
correct?
Essentially the problem? So
yes.
is Mad Miles Run Club then fundamentally an African American running club, or do you welcome everybody?
We welcome everybody. It is predominantly Black, a Black mm-hmm. running club. It's founded by a Black man and his wife. But like you said, we historically have gone to other run clubs where we are the only. So it's not that people don't say hello, but sometimes it's just that assumption of, oh, you must be a new runner. So let me show you how to do this instead of just, you know, saying hi and allowing us to be a part of a normal run. So, yes, we are welcome to everyone.
Alexandra Johnson is the lead race director of Start to Finish Event Management, board member of the Mad Miles Run Club. She's here with Shannon Woods from Brooks Running and Harry Chandler, co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company. We're going to come back with more and talk about the whiteness of running and why that is in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. In Hickory, I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about running and running becoming more diverse and more inclusive. Shannon Woods is the Senior Manager of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion for Brooks Running. They manufacture shoes for runners. Alexandria Johnson, Lead Race Director of the Start to Finish Event Management Organization and a member of the Mad Miles Run Club. And Harry Chandler, co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company and vice president of another industry group that we'll talk about in a moment, the Running Industry Association. Harry, following Ahmaud Arbery's shooting death in 2020, there were articles all over the place alleging that some black runners, as a result of that incident, gave up the sport. Others said they would only run if they carried a gun with them. And most decided that the only way to run was to run with others so that they weren't alone. Is that still the case?
Yes, but there's other opportunities that have been created by communities for people to feel safe and able to run and not to have to run alone. I said it again, and I'll circle back and say that we've been very blessed here in Charlotte, but that is not the case in the rest of the country in regards to minorities running together and are feeling safe and or how they go about it. I tell people all the time, we should run because we want to, not because we have to. Luckily enough, groups like Mad Miles and organizations like the one that Alex helps to lead, along with Start to Finish and our race directing program that we have, create opportunities for safe spaces for people to run in.
So Shannon, in 2020, the Running Industry Diversity Coalition was founded to help address what they refer to as, this is a quote, the industry's whiteness and systemic racism. Some activists, runners, say that the industry is rooted in whiteness and systemic racism. Now, those are two very separate and very different things, it seems to me. Just because something is started by white people doesn't mean that racism is at the core. It just means that's how it started. Are statements like those helpful to your cause in opening this sport up to everybody?
Well, I think those statements are just true, right? I think that you mentioned earlier the stat of 34% of runners are people of color. And that is not the case for the running industry. And within the industry, speaking of all of those who make money off of the people running. And so there are huge disparities between who is in the business of running and who's making money off of running, and then runners. And so I think that there is still room to invite more people into the actual sport of running within the running community. And there are leaps and hurdles to go within the industry as far as employment and leadership and ownership within the industry. And so, you know, some of the current data is, you know, right around like 96% of senior management within the running industry is white. And so that is just the reality of it. And really, when we look at like economic prosperity and wealth gaps within our within the United States, for us to be able to tackle that within the industry that we work in, you know, that is possible. And that is possible through a coalition of bringing the running industry together.
Is the situation in the running industry, Shannon, really any different than it is in any other major industry in America?
No, I wouldn't say that it's unique to the running industry at all. I think that it is something that we see throughout the private sector and corporate America. And this is really, you know, post 1964 Civil Rights Act and the non-discrimination laws that apply to everybody. However, affirmative action, which is, you know, actioning to reconcile those racial disparities within employment, that was not required in the public sector, in the private sector. And so as you had non-discrimination laws, there wasn't a lot of action happening within the private corporations in America to invite other people, given opportunities for employment and leadership opportunities. And so there's still a lot of room to grow. that area.
When you broaden it out to the actual athletes who are doing the running, I don't know which one of you to ask this question of, so I'll just throw it out there and you can jump in with an answer, whoever wants to take it. There is a whiteness to running. Well, that's fairly well established, and we just mentioned how few black people have engaged in this sport traditionally. But the question is why? I mean, when you look at NFL football, most of the athletes are black. When you look at NBA basketball, most of the athletes are black. There clearly is a desire that they engage in these sports. Why not running? What is it about running that they are behind the curve in this?
Well, I can kind of jump in on this one. For, I think, football and basketball, well, that historically provides a lucrative career. For running, not so much. There's not that many professional runners that are black.
Are there professional runners?
There are.
I'm unaware of. Okay.
There are professional runners, but not many of them are black. And, you know, when you even break it down to going to cross-country meets and things like that, there are not a lot of black runners. And that just comes down to access. The cost of running is substantial. And I think that is definitely something that is very difficult to come over. That's a huge barrier for runners in general.
I want to get into that a little bit later on in the program, because I ran across this numerical figure on the cost of running, which just it blew my mind. It astounded me. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. Shannon, I know you wanted to comment on what we were talking about.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when we look at the running boom of the 1970s, right, and where that originated in Eugene, Oregon, and, you know, it did the jogging and running for leisure and for health and well-being, it was really like rooted in that area. And so I think that it also contributes to the whiteness of running and running as, you know, versus competitive running, but running as leisure and running for health and well-being.
Harry, you are the chair of the retail subcommittee of the Running Industry Diversity Coalition. So I'd like to get your take on systemic racism within the industry and what you perceive to be the attitude among the members of the running community.
It's kind of one of those implied things. I give an example when I spoke last at the running event in Austin of myself. I'm sitting at a table with a group of vendors and other retail running store owners, having a conversation, not being invited much into the conversation until I was then confirmed as a legitimate part of the conversation by someone else saying that, yeah, oh, you know, Harry, he owns Charlotte Running Company. And then the switch turned on and then the conversation changed. And then I had something to say.
I don't mean to interrupt you, and I want you to continue with your school of thought, but wouldn't that be the case with anything that you have to establish your credentials, your credibility in order to be part of the conversation within any industry?
It'd be an experience. It's the emotion of conversation. It's a feeling and a culture of it. Not necessarily. And if I'm sitting at a dinner table having an appetizer, I don't think I need to say I'm Harry XYZ. We're just talking. It should be open.
Okay. I interrupted your flow. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just circling back to the conversation of barriers. And here in our region, the number is 3 out of 4 people born in poverty die in poverty. And when it comes to access to the sport of running, the races are expensive. So, no, you don't necessarily see a bunch of people. And historically, those that are on the lower end of the economic scale here in Charlotte are the underrepresented and or minority category. So am I going to go get a cotton t-shirt and run a 5K for $50, or I'm going to reallocate that to the funding of my family? So that's a thing to be considered as well.
So Harry just, Alex, mentioned the Chetty study, the fact that in Charlotte it was revealed several years ago that if you are born into poverty in Charlotte, the chances are you would die in poverty. This is based on a census study of people born in 1972. And I think they did another one about 10 or 15 years later, and it discovered that things had changed for the better, at least for the second group of people, maybe not for the first group of people. It's a long story. But one of the other studies that came out about the same time had to do with our social capital. The fact that we work together, blacks and whites and Asians and Hispanics all work together in the office, but at the end of the day at 5 o'clock, we all go into our little conclaves and we don't really talk to each other. We don't associate with it. Church is very segregated on Sunday for the most part, and that's a problem. Is running, are these running clubs, if they are more diverse, is that giving people, I know the answer to this question already, it is, giving people an opportunity to meet, talk with, and find the similarities in the other?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, running brings people together. Rather that be at a run club or at a race, it really gives people the opportunity to be around other people who aren't like them. Like you said, when they want to go out for a run, yes, they left their diverse work environment, but are we going and trying out places that have people that don't look like us or feel like us and really mending or bringing together our community? And I think the Charlotte running community has worked really hard. We're still working really hard on joining the different sub communities together. And I think and want to give a lot of kudos to the races and the race directors in Charlotte that are working together to bring together different communities to show that we all are runners and we all want the same thing, and giving a little more access to people who historically have not had access.
Shannon, the Running Industry Diversity Coalition has done some research on various aspects of running, and it found out that the certain needs of people of color had been going unmet by the running industry. I don't think this is something most of us have given much thought to, but it seems to be, once you get into it, makes a lot of sense. There were concerns about running apparel not accommodating certain body style sizes or hairstyles. And according to one of your colleagues, Allison Mariella Desir, the industry would have known that had they had more diversity in their product development and management teams, which is something Brooks evidently is working on. This isn't necessarily racist. It's simply not knowing because you're not exposed to those thoughts and ideas and needs. In the time that you have been involved at Brooks in trying to make your company more diverse and inclusive, is that changing? Is that understanding changing? Is it resulting in new products or new ways of thinking about those products?
Yes, it is changing. And I think that it's, I think it's not enough for us to just say, well, we didn't know, right? So I think that, you know, at Brooks, we are a runner first company. That is what we do. We're all about the runner. And we do talk to runners every day. To gain insights that help inform our marketing, our product development. And so making sure that we are understanding who we are talking to with those runners, right? And that we have diversity, racial diversity, gender diversity, socioeconomic diversity within the different types of runners that we are talking to gain those insights to help us make decisions on product.
So providing objects, products that speak to and meet the needs of various different kinds of people is one way to open the door and say you're welcome. The other way, Alex, is what you are doing and other running clubs are doing with in your case, the Mad Miles Run Club. How would you describe that organization? What does it do? What are you trying to accomplish?
We are just really pushing for people to have access to running, to know what it looks like to be a Black runner, to understand how to improve your running. A lot of times people have these big goals, and that goal can be to run a 5K. That goal can be to run a marathon. But it's hard to go to your local 5K and not see anybody that looks like you, or to look and watch, you know, these big marathons on TV and not see yourself represented. So we want to show our runners that you are welcome in every space. So these are the tools that we can show you and provide for you to get you there. And we're going to support you every step of the way.
Is that spoken or unspoken? Is it simply because there are lots of Black people running with this club that people feel this is my group. I belong here. Or is there more to it than that?
I think it's both spoken and unspoken. We are a very large run club, so we are really intentional about creating those smaller groups within this large run club for people who are new runners or for people who are more veteran runners that want to try new things. Just really listening to what we need, because like you said, the products, I had a hard time finding a hat that fit my curly hair. So, you know, I didn't want sun in my face. How can I get a hat that fits my hair? That is something that I didn't know until I saw another Black runner that had a hat that fit her curly hair. That's what we mean by representation. So I think just creating an environment where people feel comfortable to ask questions and to learn new things is something that we really are working towards and want to bring the rest of the Charlotte running community to do as well.
And part of your story, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, is to promote camaraderie and personal growth and to embrace diversity, obviously. But it's not a team sport normally, running. A lot of people do it by themselves, unless you're a track and field athlete or you're training for a marathon, or chances are you don't have a coach. So do these running clubs help in that aspect? In other words, people learning from other people who maybe have done it longer or have made their own set of mistakes and had their own set of injuries, and they know how to avoid it, or they know what the best shoe is for them and where to go. Is that part of what this is all about too?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think there's a misunderstanding that running is individualized. I don't think it is. I think that we grow as a runner by having the support of other people. It is so hard to get up at 4 a.m. and run 20 miles by yourself. But having people who will cheer you on, who will run miles with you, that is really what we want to promote. And that is really how we get to finish lines. You never get to a finish line alone. Maybe in your body alone, but there's always a community and support behind you. So we want to be that community and support.
Is that how you view the, I only have 30 seconds, Shannon, but is that how you view the role of diversity in these running clubs around the country?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is creating these welcome spaces, right, where people can really benefit from the transformative power of the run and find community within running.
And we have to take a break. We're going to talk a little bit more about the efforts toward diversifying the running community in Charlotte, what that means for runners of all stripes and colors, etc. When we come back in a moment, and we'll get some tips on actually paraphernalia for running as well. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Shannon Woods, Senior Manager of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Brooks Running. Alexandria Johnson is the Lead Race Director for Start-to-Finish Event Management and a board member of Mad Miles Run Club. And Harry Chandler is co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company. You've worked, Harry, with the Running Industry Diversity Coalition on events in Charlotte. What kind of events have you been involved in, and how do you see them helping to open doors in the running community for those who might otherwise feel marginalized?
There's two in specific. One that comes to mind primarily was our recreation of the cookout that was created by the Running Industry Diversity Coalition, and first happened at last year's The Running Event in Austin, Texas. That's our annual culmination where you have vendors and retail store owners come together. Concept there was just connecting communities. And the concept of community being that you need every individual part of it in order to meet the definition, right? You need minorities, you need women, you need people with mental disabilities and incapacities and all of that to create a culture that is welcome and inclusive for everyone, giving us an opportunity to connect with each other and be resources for each other and just to lean on each other and introduce the concept of family. We share this space, we share the sport, and we need everybody for it to continue to grow and move itself forward. The other was the Find Your Way career path, a kind of seminar session that we did also with the Running Industry Diversity Coalition, where we introduced some C-level executives of brands like ASICS, Nike, Brooks, Hoka to the community of Charlotte, with hopes of starting conversations that could potentially lead to jobs, that can offer some insight into the industry, that can teach people that you don't necessarily need to gain access to or have access to, when the reality in fact is that the misrepresented or underrepresented is the resource for the industry that they're missing, right? You made a point earlier, Mike, and that 34% of people are runners. That's a huge missed opportunity, 34% are minorities. That's a huge missed opportunity for the business side of those industries, but also for the diversity in production, the diversity in thought process, the diversity in concepts that you can bring back to those organizations to try to create an industry that is more inclusive and more diverse. So that was the idea there.
And the running community, the more you talk, the more it appears that the running community is a microcosm of society at large. And the value of diversity in society at large filters down to the running community and vice versa. And at Brooks, Shannon, your efforts toward diversity, equity, and inclusion extend not only to making Black runners feel more comfortable and more welcome to running in the community there, but also women, LGBTQ plus individuals, and other minorities. Which of those groups do you think is the most underrepresented group, and which needs the bigger boost?
That's an interesting question. I think that we focus on, right now, we currently focus on race, LGBTQ plus, and women, because that's where we saw the greatest need. I think that we continue to see challenges on the topic of race, and we see the most disparities within our industry with Black and African Americans. So I will say that that's where we have the most progress to make. I think that we've seen a ton of progress with the LGBTQ plus community, supporting run clubs, supporting Pride. You know, we take part in the Corporate Equality Index, which is really looking at policies and practices within the workplace for equality, making sure that benefits are equal. You know, with women, we've been working really hard and have seen significant progress in women in leadership throughout our organization.
And the progress is measurable in your mind since you began this effort? There are mile markers that you've met along the way? Things have improved? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. We strive to have at least 50% representation of women at every level of our organization. And we do report out our progress annually in our corporate responsibility report.
So one of Brooks' goals, Alex, is to let people know that everybody who wants to run is welcome to run and has a place to do it. Those are their words, not mine. With that philosophy and through your efforts at the Mad Miles Run Club and with the Start to Finish, do you feel that we are making inroads in Charlotte? Do you feel that not only are barriers being removed to running within minority communities, but that acceptance within the community at large is increasing so that we can avoid yet another tragedy like Ahmaud Arbery?
Yes. Well, I first want to shout out Brooks, because Brooks does play a really big part in bringing our running communities together here. So I'm very grateful for the work that they're putting in. We are making strides here in Charlotte. I think that is visible in the races that we put on here in Charlotte. You will see a larger amount of Black and brown runners at the start line. And, you know, one thing that I really pride myself on at my job is being able to have these conversations with race directors and organizations to let them know that there is, you know, some accessibility issues, and really helping them to figure out how we can create access for all runners, specifically Black runners. And I think that we have been very, and the running community has been very receptive to these conversations and to this feedback. So I think we're making a lot of progress. I think we still have a long way to go, but we are growing as a running community, and it is definitely something that I'm very proud to see.
And Harry, in your business, because you're in retail, clearly it's a small piece of the pie to welcome Black runners, make them feel more welcome in the running community. But when you extrapolate that out to the overall world, these little baby steps, I guess you could call them, do have an impact, don't they? Have you seen a change at the retail level as more Black people become welcome or feel welcome in the community? Are they coming in larger numbers to buy shoes, to buy clothing for the sport?
Yeah, the market share of our customer demographic is definitely a little bit more even these days. It's fluid. It comes and goes with the season. If there's races, if there's cross country, if there's track and field, and introducing new product, but absolutely. And it's not honestly just limited to the retail side. I'm excited to see it. Like, Alex won't say it, but she is the lead race director, not just race director, but lead race director as a Black woman of the largest event management company, I would say, in the region, right? Brooks and Shannon Woods partners hugely with the RIDC on a program called Run the Block, where the effort is to make sure that there is more representation and Black ownership of retail stores in the running community. I am one of five retail stores in the Specialty Run channel that has Black ownership. 10 if you kind of work your way outside of that. So progress in some measures is slow, but it's definitely visible and it's happening.
At RIDC, by the way, is Running Industry Diversity Coalition, for those who are not with us 5 minutes ago when we talked about it a little bit. Harry, I don't want to run out of time before we talk about the necessities for everybody have when they get into this activity. You've been talking about barriers and lowering those barriers. Here's one we haven't really talked about, though it has been alluded to, and that is the cost. I was shocked yesterday when I read this number. It's $1,700 on average. The average runner spends $1,795 a year on, I can't fathom that, on running gear and on races, including $500 a year on shoes and apparel. And that sounds high for a sport that doesn't include pads or helmets or balls and bats and country club memberships. If you're just starting out and you have limited finances, how little can you spend and still become good at what you do, running? And be injury-free.
Yeah. The best thing about entering into the sport of running in a retail space, especially on the specialty side, that most people don't gather is you got to go into the store. You have to go in to experience it, to feel it, to get fit properly, but also to see that there are options for shoes that don't cost $160 or $180. There are shorts and running singlets that you can get that don't cost $95 or $100. There are run clubs that are free and accessible to you to go and to join and to gain community that you can go to 7 days a week if you want to. Some days you can hit three runs. There are opportunities and there are options. I would always suggest a new runner does go into a specialty run shop and get fit properly for shoes so they avoid the inevitable injury.
Shannon, you work for a shoe company, so I'm going to ask this question of you, and I know you're not in the business of designing the shoes, so this may not be the right question. We may have to throw it back to Harry here, but I would take it that running starts with a pair of shoes. So what should people look for in that pair of shoes?
Yeah, I mean, I will pass this back to Harry, as like technically he's going to be a more expert for sure. I for sure look at, you know, what looks good. So shout out to the new Glycerin Max that just launched last week. But I think that there's, you know, we have several different comfort levels. And I think finding what works for how you run and how your body moves is going to be the best for you. And I'll pass it to Harry.
And that goes back, Harry, to what you were just saying. You have to go into the store. And it seems to me that you'd be best served to go into a store that's run by running enthusiasts, not part-time workers that they hired because they didn't want to work at Burger King.
Ideally, you'd go into Charlotte Running Company. But if you, yes, you would go into another specialty run shop. We operate fit, function, fashion. And we qualify our customers when they come in. So what brings you in? Do you have any injuries? Were you suggested our store by a PT physical therapist, Cairo? What are your goals? Then we'll take out the branding device and we measure a customer's foot. I don't think anyone, we get so many customers that come in and say, I haven't seen one of those in 50 years. But it's like the little metal machine with the sliding scale. We'll then scan your foot, 3D scan, so we can get pressure points, so we can get the volume that your foot requires inside of the footwear. Then we do a gait analysis, a video gait analysis, where we watch you run on the treadmill. We take that information and we slow it down so we can see how your ankles, knees, and hips collaborate to create your biomechanics of your gait. From there, we put you into a category of shoe, and then we bring out shoes based on that. And then after you're in the one that feels the best in Shannon, we get you 17 colors, and then you can choose the one that you like.
I've actually been through this, and it was eye-opening for me because they watch me walk, they watch me run on the treadmill, they're experts at what they're looking at. The one thing you didn't mention is arches. The arch of your foot, the height of the arch of your foot plays a role in the actual shoe that is best for you. Is that correct?
Correct. That's the volume. So right.
Oh, that's the volume. Okay.
Yeah. So the depth of volume that your foot requires to fit into the shoe properly. If you have a higher bridge, you need more volume. You have a higher arch, you require a higher drop. That's the heel to toe decline for the sake of construction. So it truly fits the anatomy of a person's foot.
So Alex, I was going to ask Harry this question because he has a conflict of interest here, I'm going to ask it of you. Does, from your experience as a runner, does price equate the quality in a shoe?
Oh man. Well, I'm a little biased myself, but I will say there are shoes that are like $250 that have never done me good. And I am a marathoner. So I would say that you can get a really good pair of shoes for less than $100. And sometimes those last season shoes are better, for, in my opinion, have fit me better. So I am always on the cost friendly side. So price does not equate to value, or I guess the performance. But definitely know what shoes are best for your feet, because that can make or break your running for sure.
And from an experienced runner's point of view, and for somebody who might be mentoring newcomers to this activity, what should you look for in a retail store that sells shoes and other running paraphernalia? What do you want to see in that store?
Yeah, definitely someone that has that expertise, but just listens to you and all of your concerns. It is very intimidating being a new runner. We've all been there though. So I think just someone that listens to all of your questions and doesn't treat you like a newbie, but wants to support you the best way that they can. And just doesn't pressure you. I think that Charlotte Running Company does a really good job at not pressuring you to buy things. They really want to educate you. So I just, you know, would encourage people to look for someone that educates you.
Is there a difference, Harry, in the brands, the various brands of running shoes out there? I mean, if you get a quality running shoe from each of those various brands, is there a difference, or does it really depend on your anatomy and what works
for you? It's the person's anatomy. Every brand that we carry is quality. Every brand that we carry are going to be the best technical performance product in the world. But it boils down to what the person's needs are.
Absolutely. And you say, you tell customers to go with the shoe you least notice. And by that, I'm sure you're not talking about what they look like, what they feel like. If you can't feel them, is that the test?
Yeah, you want the shoe to be a natural extension of your foot. Did I fit you? Because I feel like that, like, man, I definitely say that to my customers. Alex made a great point in that we educate, we don't sell. I say that to nauseam, probably with some of my team members, but it's really what we try to do. But yes, you want to go with the shoe that you notice the least, that feels like a natural extension of your foot. Because if you feel something, the implication there is friction, and then friction then leads to blistering and now the discomfort.
And also, blue and black toes are not a good thing, and not necessary to be successful in this sport. You also say that when you find the perfect pair of shoes, buy a second pair. Correct? Because why?
You read, okay, now I know, you read Forbes. But
oh yeah, I read Forbes. I read everything. I have 30 seconds, but go ahead.
Shoes need 24 hours to rebound. So the foam is a man-made technical product. It compresses, it compresses, it compresses when we run. So if you give it an opportunity to sit and rebound and wear another pair the next day, a shoe that will last you for 4 months can last you for six.
So you're actually saving money. Harry Chandler is the co-owner of the Charlotte Running Company, Vice President of the Running Industry Association, Shannon Wood, Senior Manager of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Brooks Running in Alexandria Johnson, the lead race director at Start to Finish, and board member of the Mad Miles Run Club. Thank you all.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. We have production help from Gene Davis, Chris Jones, and Jesse Steinmetz. For information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.